Like so many of you, we battle depression during life's many ups and downs.
Music has always been there to help us through the tough times that we all face.
Follow us on our journey as we discuss the healing power of music.
Interview artists and bands.
Break down genres and music news.
Review artist biographies.
And much, much more.
You're listening to the When Words Fail Music Speaks podcast. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to When Words Fail Music Speaks, where we fight depression with the power of music. I'm your professional handicapped host, James Cox. I got another interview today. This is going to be great because when Claire, I just remembered her name is Claire, thanks to Carolyn. She sent me an email, and from her excerpt, I just had to have Carolyn Ruth on. It's Ruth, just like the candy bar.
That's right.
But she's sweet, right? Yes. Carolyn, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I hope you are. I'm really excited to be here and talk to you tonight.
Yeah, it's going to be fun, you know? So where are you? Okay, so you were born in North Carolina?
Yes, I was. A okay. Little town called Siler City.
Siler City, yeah. Because yeah, I'm one state, one state under you. I'm in South Carolina, you know?
Okay, yeah.
So I don't know if I can hear you. I can't hear you.
Okay. You should.
Oh, there we go.
Got it. Okay, great.
It happens to the best of us. Yeah, but I'm in South Carolina, and you were in North, right?
Yep.
So where are you located now? Because you're born in North Carolina. So where are you now?
In Siler City. It's a little bitty town right in the middle of the state. We are where 421 and US 64 cross. Born and raised here, and that's still where I call home right now.
Yes. That's perfect. So, you were a singer in your church, correct?
I was. That's where I really started singing, was at church. I was a little bitty thing, and I think I was just always naturally attracted to music.
Yeah. So, were you like the shy type, or were you like outgoing, outspoken? Everybody has to hear Carolyn.
Never shy.
Okay. Good.
I've been shy a day in my life.
Neither is my mom. She can talk to anybody she wants to. And they'll be best friends by the end of it, you know? So, and I feel like you have to say. Okay, so let's stick to your childhood for a minute.
Okay.
I don't know if you can answer this, and if not, it's okay, because I can't even remember my second or third birthday, you know. But musically, do you remember your first memory of music? I mean, was it from like a TV ad or a radio or?
Actually, it was from being in church. It just, you know, Sunday school classes, and you do these little songs and little limericks. And from there, I went on into the children's choir, which was always fun when you get old enough to join the children's choir and get to sing. It was really in the second grade that I knew, absolutely knew beyond a shadow of a doubt, that this is what I wanted to do with my life. And we did a little in-school talent showcase. It wasn't a competition. It was just a showcase at Christmas. And all the elementary classes, each one got up and performed a song. And I got chosen to sing as part of a little trio with two little boys in my class for the song, All I Want for Christmas is My Two Front Teeth.
Yeah.
And I got picked because I was missing two front teeth at the time.
You were made to play a role, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And we got out there on the front of the stage, and the music started, and the spotlight hit me, and that was all it took. Mm. In for a penny, in for a pound. This is where I wanted to be. This is where I was comfortable on the stage in the spotlight. And so from that point on, it grew from that.
Yeah.
I had my passion. I felt like I found my purpose in life.
There you go. Now that was in church though, right?
The talent show was actually at my school.
Okay. So that, yes. I do have you on your television. Okay. So I found out that you did musicals also in high school too, right?
I did. Okay. I did. I went to a large high school and had an absolute great time. I was in a small performing group there, as well as some of the larger choirs. And every year in the spring, we would do a musical. And so I got to not only sing, but I was introduced to stage and live performance from that aspect. And that just hooked me even more.
Yeah.
I love that whole theater feel and being out there and being creative and being able to step into a role of being somebody else.
Yes. We all wanted to do that, you know, get away from life. And one day I think everybody should be an actor or something, you know, because it's a lot more fun being pretending somebody you're not, really, you know.
It absolutely is. It's a blast. And I learned a lot. I was mentored by my choral teacher, Dr. Joanne Bowman. And she literally got me through high school because my focus was on that. And she was just a wonderful, wonderful person. Yeah. And I credit her with a lot of where I am today because I learned a lot of hard lessons then. And I lean on that still. I still lean on those lessons and what I learned in those early days in high school.
Yeah. What's your favorite musical of all time from beginning with, you know, now?
Contemporary Christian.
Okay.
Contemporary Christian music. My heart is there always. Contemporary Christian rock and roll. Of course, I love bluegrass. That's what I'm doing now. And I love all forms of music, even music that I don't necessarily listen to on a daily basis, or I don't gravitate towards in playlists. But I love all forms of music. I appreciate all forms of music because there's so much involved, and some is so intricate and some is so simple, but there's a place for all of it. Everybody finds their niche when it comes to music, and that's what they gravitate towards, and that's what really fills their heart and lightens their load sometimes. And I think that's important. I think it's important to keep an open mind where music's concerned. Yeah. Even if you may not really like it, you've got to appreciate the talent that an artist puts into it and the heart and soul that's at the core of all of it.
I rarely listen to rap music, and I'm sure you've heard rap music too.
Yeah.
But I don't really like it that much now, but I do appreciate it where it's come from. You know, all the rap music back then was great, you know.
And that music is such a difficult thing to perform. Rap is hard.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a whole different level of talent. These folks that are out there, that are really up there and doing this rap music and making it work, and it's a whole different type of creativity. I'm like you. I appreciate it. Yeah. I respect it. The year that they did it for the Super Bowl, I was like, yes, this is awesome. It's something else out there, and I love to see it. I love to see it live more than I like to hear it recorded.
I do like that every aspect, you know, going to live games, going to live concerts, you know, it's about the experience, you know. Yeah. When they're home watching it, it's like, that's not fun, you know? Yeah. So, like you said, you do bluegrass, and a lot of people get confused about what bluegrass is and what country is. I guess bluegrass would be a subtitle of country.
Well, this is an entirely different beast that we're fixing to get into.
Okay.
And that is because bluegrass and country are really kissing cousins.
Okay.
You know, a lot of what country is now have roots really deep in bluegrass in the early beginnings. And so, you know, back years ago, even on the Opry, it was all kind of one thing. It was all sort of melded together. And since then, we've created all of these different genres and these subgenres, and people tend to separate those two more than they actually could be. Bluegrass tends to be all acoustic.
Yes.
Which, you know, country is more electrified. But when you listen to the songs and the subject matter, they're very closely related. Especially, well, not just now, all the time. They're very closely related in the message that they convey, in the authenticity of the music. It's bluegrass and country both are very heartfelt musics.
Mm.
Bluegrass maybe a little bit more now because it's a smaller genre and artists tend to be more accessible.
Okay.
So you can have that one-on-one personal relationship with an artist that you may not be able to get to with a country artist. Mm. As far as the subgenres, bluegrass isn't technically a country subgenre, but it kind of is.
Yeah. It's kind of not, but kind of is, you know, it's kind of borderline. It's that gray area, you know.
It's really good. And I like it like that.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of genres because I think a good song is a good song.
Yeah.
And no matter how you perform a good song, it's still going to be a good song. And a song will tell you what it needs.
Yeah.
Crazy to think of that, but a song will tell you what it needs. And as long as an artist is true to that song, to the message, to the melody, to everything that song is, you know, some writer somewhere poured their heart into this.
Yeah.
They sweat blood and tears to this is their baby, their song that they created. And for an artist to be able to take that and mold that and convey that to an audience, it's really special. It's a really special thing.
Right. Yeah. Well, I'm going to tell you something, and I think that you'll enjoy hearing this. Probably not. I don't know, you know. But I want to talk about your album, your most recent album, Where You've Been, which came out in August 23rd, 2024. I can't talk today. But okay, so where you've been? The track title is very special to me because when I first listened to it, the only thing that I could think about, okay, was being outside at my friend's house. We're having a big party. We always had parties back then, you know. It's really, really cold outside, right? And I love the cold weather, you know. The song Where You've Been just brought back all those good memories for me, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great song. And our whole pretense with this album is, you know, it's important in life sometimes to know where you came from.
Mm-hmm.
In order to understand and appreciate where you're at now and where you're going.
Right.
And, you know, this song for me is kind of that. And I'm like you, I think about all the memories of my past, my childhood, the good, the bad.
And the ugly, right?
Exactly. And yeah. I think it's important to remember even the bad things because you can learn a lot from those experiences. And sometimes it takes a bad experience to lead you to a good experience.
It does.
So, but that song, and I love Roots Can Raise a Boy, but it's the miles that make a man.
Right.
I love that line. I think, you know, that life experience, there's just no substitute for that. And that's sort of what this song is getting at, is remember what's there, enjoy everything, and just know that where you came from affects where you're going and where you've been.
Right. I totally agree with you. You know, that's something special, you know. But I did listen to the album Vagabonds, and I really dig two songs, A Lot More Love, which is amazingly awesome. You know, it's just musically fitting, you know, because it's about love. And there's certain notes that remind you of love, even though you've never heard of it. You know, like a guitar can have one note, and it just reminds me of love, reminds me of hate. You know, it's different sounds for different moods, you know. But a Lot More Love is one, and I love y'all's rendition of Knocking on Heaven's Door.
Oh, thank you.
I just love cover songs.
Yeah, that one kind of happened by accident.
Okay.
We were in California playing at a casino.
Yeah.
And we had this guy that kept walking by the stage and sort of looking funny at us. And finally, he got brave enough to ask us, he said, "Do y'all know any Dylan?" Well, we had never done any Dylan songs. Not because we didn't like Dylan. We had just never pulled anything out and done it. But Daniel and I both knew Knocking on Heaven's Door. We'd never performed it. We had never even played it for any reason with the band. And he said, "Well, let's try it." And we did it, and it came off really good. And we kept doing it at shows, and people started liking it. And this miraculous thing happened. They would come to the record table, and they would say, "Hey, what CD is knocking on heaven's door on. And Daniel, the next one.
Right. Yeah. So
the next one, which was Vagabonds, had knocking on heaven's door on it.
Hey, there you go. Yeah. Yeah. I guess when you get a request for a song, you just have to do it on the next record, right? I mean, there's no if, ands, or buts, you know, but, another album that I really loved it's Nail by Nail, which came out in 2012.
Yes.
And this is a Christian kind of cover album because there's no cover songs, you know? So let's talk about this for a minute real fast. I read that you suffered two strokes that cost you your speech and mobility on your right side.
That's correct.
But after intensive rehab, you learned to walk and speak and write again, right?
Yes.
So what year did that happen? And was Nail by Nail I don't want to say spinoff of that, but
yeah. Yeah, we started the band in 2003 in September. Yeah. Well, that year in November, Thanksgiving Day is when I had my strokes in 2003. And so we'd already started New Blue, but, you know, it was a baby band. It was just this fledgling little band. We had this dream about and we had this goal to do this. And then I had my strokes. And that sort of, it didn't derail everything, but it certainly put the brakes on for a little bit.
Yeah.
While I was in the hospital still, Daniel got some musician friends of his, and the hospital allowed us to have them in the room so that we could do some music. And I already had my speech back then. I stumbled a little bit, but I could talk. I could communicate well, but I couldn't remember words of songs. Songs that I knew, the words were just gone. That was very upsetting. So then I had to learn to walk. I had to learn to write again and all of that stuff. And I did have a lot of people praying for me and was able to recover like 99.9% to where I am now. I still got a few little bobbles that come up now and again. I probably always will, but that's okay because I'm back doing what I love. And Nail by Nail came out in 2012, which was after that, but I kept telling Daniel, I said, we've got to do an all gospel project. I mean, I just felt it. I knew after recovering from those strokes, we've got to do a gospel album. Well, we were with a new record label and they're like, no, you don't need to do a gospel album yet. We need to do this one out of the gate. And then the next one, we got to do this one next. We got to do secular. And by the third album, I told Daniel, I said, I don't care what anybody says. This next album is going to be a gospel CD.
Yeah.
It was. And there was so much heart and so much passion in that CD and in that music. And it's still to this day one of my very favorite CDs that we've done. Yeah. And it was very interesting that until that, our first CDs did well, but on radio, we didn't get a lot of airplay. Again, you know, we're a new band. We're beginning. We're trying to get out there. And when we did that CD, that was the turning point for us. That's the first CD that we charted a song off of, Martha and Mary. I don't know if you listened to that one.
Yeah. Martha and Mary is one of my favorite songs from that. Yeah.
That was the first song we actually charted that actually amounted to anything on the bluegrass chart. So it's amazing what God can do.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely.
Just follow his will and do what he tells you to do. And that project is just, that's a very good example of that happening.
Yeah. I also love the song. You See Jesus, I think it's the name. Yes. Yeah. You See Jesus, you know.
That's an incredible, incredible song.
Yeah.
I wish I had written it.
Okay. So you did. Okay.
No, in fact, that CD, the only song I wrote on that CD was Hammer.
Okay.
And Hammer was my right. Everything else came from other writers, but we're so blessed to get music from so many wonderful, wonderful writers that we usually stick to those more than our own.
Yeah.
Because when somebody else sends you their work, if you don't go ahead and cut it, if you love it, but you don't take it when they send it to you, there's a good possibility it might not still be there.
So, the next right. Yeah, yeah.
But if I wrote it, I can sit on it till eternity and nobody else is going to have it. It's still going to be there for me.
Still going to be tucked in that closet. Yeah. Yeah.
And at the end of the day, the best song wins.
There you go.
If I haven't written something that's better than everything we get turned, everything we get sent, then I'll use what's there.
Yeah. Because I think I heard one time that Elvis Presley wanted to record Tutti Frutti and never did. Oh, and then Richard recorded that and boom.
And there's a lot of songs like that that we get that we just absolutely adore the songs, but they may not fit the narrative for that particular project.
You're right.
I keep every song that I get, any song that gets pitched to us, I keep in a database here at home. And those that I really loved, I remember, we'll start a new project and I might think of something. Oh, this song from 2 years ago, I really loved that. And we'll pull it back out and I'll get in contact with the publishers or with the writers and see if it's still available. And there's been several songs that we recorded, Still Small Voice from the Vagabond CD.
Yeah.
That one, I had been sent like 3 albums before that.
Yeah.
I kind of tucked it away. And when Vagabonds came along, I remembered it. I was still in love with the tune. It worked out, and we got the first cut on it.
Nice. So, nice. So when you get the first cut or first opportunity to record it, right, does the original songwriter have music for it, or do they just play? You can come up with everything.
They send you a demo, and that's how they want the song to be. Now, artists can take small liberties here and there.
Yeah.
I always, if we're going to take any kind of small deviation like that, I always want to talk to the writer first.
Yeah.
Because again, it's their baby. And, you know, this is their heart that was in this song. And I don't want to do anything to a song that's going to change that or that might upset them because it was changed. So I always check with the writers. Forgiveless River was on the All the Way album. And that one was one, it was a little different. We changed the structure of that song a little bit. We didn't change the melody. We didn't change the words. We just changed the arrangement and the structure a little bit. Right. It actually, the writer had written it so that it ended on a happy note.
Yes. Yeah,
and
right.
I'm fond of happy songs. I like sad songs.
Oh, you do? Oh, come I on like now. Right.
That really kind of dig down there and route out your soul just a little bit when you're singing it or when you're listening to it. And this song was like that up until the happy turn at the end. And I'm like, no, it can't end happy. It's got to end very reflective and something that's going to make you go back and think and go, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And I talked to her and she was like, great with it. So little things like that sometimes we can mold to what we're doing and more to our style. And it's great.
Okay. Yeah, I'd never thought about changing a happy ending to like a, you know, sad ending, which somebody needs to hear that, you know, because everything is not always happy and you need to feel those feelings in that moment to get over it.
Now, we do happy songs. Please don't.
But
I really like the heart jerkers. I really like those. And I love minor keys. I love them to be in minor keys, kind of that little haunting flavor to them. Yeah. They're a lot of fun.
What do you know about Alison Krauss and why is she your favorite musician?
Alison Krauss is awesome.
Yeah.
Obviously,
Agreed. Agreed fully, you know.
I don't think you'll find anybody that will disagree with that.
No.
She's definitely one of several, but one of the ladies that helped open up bluegrass to a whole new audience when she did some country stuff. And she's just such a prolific performer in everything that she does.
Right.
I got to meet her one time. Only one time I've talked to her.
Did you take a picture with her?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Oh, yeah, James, come on now. Of course, dude. Yeah.
And I know a lot of people in the industry that are really good friends with her.
Okay.
But I'm not one to call in favors.
Yeah.
So I kind of take it as it rolls. And yeah. I was fortunate enough 1 year to be at a venue and was backstage and got to meet her. So nice. it was really nice. She's a really sweet lady. She is. She has a very genuine heart for the music, and she really loves her fans.
Yeah. Before of Alison Krauss was your favorite musician. Before that, who was your favorite musician before Krauss?
Actually,
or was it always Krauss?
Well, I can't say it was always Krauss.
Okay.
Because as much as I love her now, she wasn't, when I was younger, she wasn't really in my vision, because I didn't do bluegrass to begin with. I started out with the church music, like we talked about, and then I did all the Broadway stuff in high school, and I went through my little country phase, and at the end of the day, I landed on rock and roll.
There you go. Good, yeah.
So that's sort of where I stayed, and I wasn't real fond of bluegrass at the time. So my three top female vocalists.
Nice, let me hear them, yeah.
Bonnie Raitt.
Of course.
I love Bonnie Raitt. I love her soul. I love her music. Everything. I love Bonnie Raitt. Celine Dion.
Okay. Fair.
Yeah. Very different. Very different category. Side note, I got to see her in concert.
Yes.
The February 2020 of COVID, the COVID year, in February before the world shut down.
Yeah. Right.
She was doing her tour, and I got to see her. My son gave me tickets for Christmas. I'd never been to see her, and I'm still just flabbergasted. There are no words for what she did
right
on stage. But, okay, so Celine Dion. I'm sorry, I sidetracked.
You can geek out.
Absolute favorite female vocalist of all times, tops everybody's, Pat Benatar.
Pat Benatar. I never would have thought that. Yeah.
She is my girl. Now, what most people, or what many people, don't realize about Pat Benatar is her mother was an opera singer.
Mm-hmm.
Pat Benatar was classically trained.
Okay.
So that's the reason she has this phenomenal range, and she can do all this stuff that some other artists can't do as well as she does. But I love Pat Benatar. I love what she does. I love the music that she picks. I love the intensity that she sings with.
She's still going. She's still, yeah.
She absolutely is. And she's just as good as she ever was.
Right.
Her performances aren't quite as wild as some of them used to be. But she never was really, she never was a crazy wild artist. I mean, even though it was a rock and roll show, I got to see her live a few times.
Yeah.
And even though it was a rock and roll show, it was really tame. I mean, there was some nice effects and lights and all, but she kept all her clothes on. And
you're right. Well, thank you for that. Right? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, but she's just really awesome. I'm hoping one day I'll get to meet her.
Yeah. Yeah. Some of the best shows are just so simple. You know, you don't need to be kissed with all the fireworks and anything. That's cool. You know, that's good stuff, you know, but it's like.
And I love that stuff, but my mark of a true vocalist, not a singer, but a true vocalist, is somebody like Celine Dion that could stand at a microphone without touching anything, just stand at a microphone for an entire concert and just sing, no lights, no nothing, and you would sit there and listen to them because they're that good.
Right, yes.
That is my definition of a truly phenomenal vocalist, and right, that's a quality that all three of those ladies have, and Alison has that too.
Yeah,
Alison has that same quality. You could sit and just listen to her sing and not need all the pomp and circumstance and right, the show going on around her.
Absolutely,
because
not
that beautiful yeah voice is enough to draw you in and hold you there.
Right. Yeah. And the stage presence from her must be like really captivating too, you know.
She is. Again, she's very genuine. She's very authentic. She sings, she talks to the audience, and it's like we're just sitting here talking right now.
Yeah.
You would think you were having a personal conversation with you. She's very relatable. So is Celine.
Oh, yeah.
Incredibly relatable. So those are just some of the qualities I'm really drawn to.
Nice. I want to go back for a minute about your stroke and your healing process, right? So I know that this is called When the Words Fail, Music Speaks, right? But dealing with us dealing with mental health and you going through your strokes, right? Were there songs that became more or less like a healing soundtrack during your recovery? I mean, did you turn to one or two songs more so than any other song?
We actually recorded a song after the strokes that has continued to be very healing for me. I almost consider it my testimony song for my strokes. It's called Make Me Whole Again. It was on our Blue Disc album. And it starts out, drowning in silence, too loud to sleep. And that's how I felt. That is exactly how I felt. Because right before I had my strokes at the onset, I could hear the world going on around me. But I couldn't speak. I couldn't participate in it. And I did feel like I was drowning. Yeah. Earlier, after the strokes, before that song came along, I listened to mostly contemporary Christian music.
Okay. Yeah.
Predominantly. Yeah. Point of Grace. I was very drawn to Point of Grace. Jesus Will Still Be There was one of my favorite songs that they did. That I listened to a lot. Susan Ashton, Stephen Curtis Chapman. Those are the artists that I was really gravitating towards them. And I got a lot out of that music, and it tended to be very soothing.
Yeah.
And helped me through. Now, I can't listen to much contemporary music continuously without hitting a point that I'm just crying. Yeah. I'm just bawling. But that's the release that I need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sometimes that's just, you just need to get that out. And music is the one thing that can pull it out, I feel like, in a positive way.
I think
it's a different emotion, even when it's a sad song. I think it's a different emotion sometimes than, you know, if you're sad because your dog dies.
Right. Yeah.
If you're grieving because of that, I think it's just, music has a way of taking those emotions and binding them so that you can swallow them and get over them a little bit easier to give you, to soothe you. And I love the title, When Words Fail, Music Speaks. I love that because I feel that and I totally agree with that.
And it's so true, you know?
Yeah. It's the universal language.
There's
no creed, there's no nationality. There's nothing. It's just music. Music just, it can speak to everybody. Mm-hmm. Everybody on all different levels. And I think that's the most endearing, most incredible thing about music.
Exactly. I completely agree with you, you know. And like you said, music has no language. Because there's bands overseas that I listen to. I don't understand what they're saying, but I do understand what they're saying at the same time, which is weird, you know, because you feel that emotion that the singer, the band members are delivering through your headset, you know? So it's awesome, awesome. So you mentioned Daniel, so let's talk about that for a minute or two, because he is your husband, right?
He is my husband. Right.
And you started a new blue with your husband, Daniel.
Uh-huh. We started singing. We started playing contemporary Christian together.
Okay. Yeah.
At the beginning, long before we were married, I had a contemporary Christian band and I needed a bass player. And we had met one day and I knew he played. He was playing in a bluegrass band. At the time, he was playing banjo. And I said, hey, I need a bass player. Do you know any bass players? And he said, what kind of music? I said, contemporary Christian. He said, I don't know how to play bass, but I'll learn.
There you go. That's a good man. Same thing happened with the Alabama drummer. He's like, what kind of music do we play? Country. I'm not really a big fan, but I'll learn how to play. That's what he said, you know, and he became one of the best drummers in history right now. Yeah,
we did that for a while. We did a little bit of rock and roll, some classic rock stuff, and then we just turned the page and started New Blue and started playing bluegrass full time. And Daniel and I, we started New Blue in 2003. Let me back up. We met at the end of 2000, like right before Christmas.
Okay.
We started playing music together in 2001 in the early part of the year. 2003 is when we started New Blue. We didn't get married until 2006.
Okay.
There was a progression there.
Oh, yeah. Build up, right? Yeah.
I always joke around with everybody that we never dated. We undated because we were just together all the time playing music. So, right. But we started in 2003. We got married in 2006. And then we went full time on the road in 2011.
Okay.
All right. And life has been a whirlwind since then.
Yeah. In a good way, right?
A good way. You know, I tell people some days are longer than others.
Yeah, right. That's true.
Right. And yeah. Just you get through it and you know that there's something good coming on the other side of it. So, yeah, we, it's funny because when we first started playing music together and he was learning to play bass, I used to get so aggravated at him. And I used to, every day when I'd get home from work, the drummer and I were old friends, like from the time we were kids, we were old friends. Yeah. And I would call him every day and say, please, 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 can we fire him?
Oh, really?
Fire him. I'm just so frustrated with all this. And the drummer would be like, no, 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 let's just wait. Just give him a chance. Give him a chance. He's got it in him. Let's just give him a chance. And he was right.
And 3 years later, you buried him, right?
Once Daniel hit his stride, it was just, yeah. It was like one day he was sort of fumbling on bass and the next day it was just bam, he had it. But then when we started New Blue, he started playing guitar. He was playing guitar instead of banjo or bass. So it went from there.
So I got to know this. I just have to know this. Okay. Between you and him now, who wins band arguments?
How about all arguments? No.
Oh, sure. We can do that.
You know, the whole
like does it kind of like equal out, you know?
The whole band thing, we each kind of have different roles. And okay. So one or the other of us usually sort of takes precedent depending on what it is we're talking about and what situation we're dealing with. An example, Daniel does most of the booking. So when it comes to booking and, you know, how much we're getting paid and where we're traveling and all that stuff, that's his ball of wax. Now, I might interject sometimes. I might give my opinion or he might ask what I think about, you know, going here, going there or stringing stuff together. And so we'll discuss those things. When it comes to songs and what we choose to go on a CD, I listen to all the songs first.
Okay.
I'm the gatekeeper, per se, when we get new music. Now, I'll let him listen to everything, but it's mostly like I'll turn it on. He'll look at me and say, do I really need to listen to this? And I'm like, no, I don't think you really need to listen to this one unless you just want to. And he'll be like, no, let me hear the next one.
Right. Yeah, good.
Uh-huh. You know, there's that trust that goes on. Even when we're choosing who's going to do what song, that's never really an argument. We right. just sort of gravitate towards what we feel the most out of. And then once we sort of narrow it down to a manageable number, we'll take it to the band and get their opinion and see what those guys think. But there's not really, we argue all the time in a good way, constructive.
Okay, good. I don't want to, right.
Natural redheads.
Right. Okay. So okay.
When we get together and actually have a disagreement, the earth shakes.
Okay, chaos ensues, right?
Get very intense. But when we started, I was telling you, when we started with music together before we got married, our relationship started as a friendship. We built the friendship. And, you know, we were best friends. And when you've got a best friend, you don't really think about hurting their feelings per se. I mean, it's like.
Well, you do, but you don't really. Yeah.
My butt look big, you know. Yeah, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, yeah, don't say that. You guys don't want to say that. I mean,
if you're dating somebody and the guy says that to you, you're done.
You're right.
that was the whole foundation of our relationship, and I really attribute that with us being able to spend as much time together as we do, especially on the road when we're traveling around in a 45-foot bus for weeks on end. There's not a lot of room to get away from each other doing that, so you have to learn to compromise, and you have to learn to be able to fight constructively, forgive and forget, and get on with life.
Yeah.
Very accomplished at that.
And never go to bed angry, I've heard.
Yes, so, very accomplished at that. So.
Oh, okay, great. Okay. But I do want to go further down the road and talk about Bluegrass Ridge that you host with your husband, Daniel, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, so... when I was looking that up, that it said that it's MTV for bluegrass.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so for anybody who doesn't remember, MTV, it was the greatest channel on earth until they ruined it with reality. Yeah. It's like 24 hours of music videos, TRL, great stuff. But Bluegrass Rich is it's like that, but bluegrass.
It's okay. A video. And New Blue has videos on there sometimes that we've done, but it's not about New Blue. It's about all bluegrass artists. Right. We get videos from everybody across the board that sends us stuff, and that's what we promote. We promote everybody else. We want to get their music out there and, you know, let people know these artists are there, and you may want to go see them because look at this that they did, and it's really good. And we do artist interviews on there. We have a spotlight segment every week with an artist interview.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun to be in that position and be able to not promote yourself so much, but promote the other artists and help everybody out.
Right, yeah.
It's been a phenomenal thing. And like right now, we are in 1.2 million homes a week.
Oh.
Broadcast TV.
Yeah.
It's not well. You can see it online. You can go to BluegrassRidgeTV.com, mouthful. And you can see some of the past shows on their streaming. But it's predominantly a broadcast TV show, and we're in... This is bad. I don't know the numbers. Daniel has these memorized. It's Daniel's thing. This is his thing that he does for the band and for Bluegrass Ridge. But we are on a bunch of networks across the country and five other countries. And also we have got affiliates in major markets all across the country. So if you want to see Bluegrass Ridge, you can find Bluegrass Ridge.
They can find you, right?
Find Bluegrass Ridge somewhere,
right?
To watch it on TV. So I think that's pretty cool too, because we are the largest TV show for bluegrass in the world.
I love that. I love that. So,
again, it's a lot of fun, and we consider it a great privilege to be able to do that.
And I do love the fact that you're promoting independent artists. You know. Like me, you know. Of course, it's always fun and exciting if you get like a major artist on, you know. But sometimes more people need to listen to independent artist stuff that they never even, you know, thought about listening to. You know, so that's the best mix to me.
Good mix. I mean, we've got most all the really big bands that you think of as being like top tier bands in bluegrass. You know, Alison Krauss and Third Time Out and Lonesome River Band, and I'm going to get in trouble because I didn't mention all of them, but there are so many.
you working with Ricky Skaggs one time, right?
Yes.
Yeah, he's so well known.
There's another one.
Yeah.
You know, if they've put out a video and we've got it, if they send it to us, then we put it on air. So there's a good mix. And then there's the newer artists that, like you say, a lot of people haven't met yet. They may not realize that they're out there. And it really puts them in a place that they get seen. Bluegrass streaming videos are great. YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, all that reaches a huge audience. But broadcast TV tends to reach a different type of audience. Mm-hmm. It reaches people that may not know the music to go and search for it on social media, but they're sitting there flipping their TV around, channel surfing, and there's a banjo, and they're like, what is that? And, you know, they might stop and listen to it, something they've never really paid attention to before, and now you've got a new fan that's not only going to watch your videos, but it's going to go find the music that these artists have out and maybe find a festival or a show somewhere, a theater show or something where there's bluegrass or acoustic music, and they're going to go see it. And suddenly, you've got a new bluegrass fan.
There we go. Yeah.
It's been a pretty phenomenal thing. And there's been a lot of people that have come up and talked to us and said, you know, we'd never really listened to bluegrass. We really never gravitated towards bluegrass, but we saw this when we were channel surfing, and now they watch the show all the time and are actually starting to investigate and enjoy some of this music and learning about new artists. So it's kind of shows good for everybody.
And it's good for the soul because bluegrass is like a, it's like a soulful, like clean, like music. You know, you don't have to worry about.
It's very family friendly.
Yes, which I love too. Yeah. So
all right. Very family friendly. I love that too. Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, kids come to the shows and I love seeing the young people. I love the older generation that is still out there and still supporting the music. They're the ones that have kept the music alive. Yeah. Through the generations that have loved it and have accepted it and have really gotten it out there. And they're teaching the kids to love it too. They're exposing them to it. But it's very gratifying to see kids in the audience at any point in time. Yeah. To know that there's this new generation and to see these kids out at festivals and they've got their instruments out and they're playing and they're jamming with some of the old timers and they're learning and they're absorbing. They're absorbing not only the newer style stuff like what we're doing, but they're learning about all this old traditional stuff and the roots of the music and where it came from and how it started. And so they're the ones that are going to carry the tradition on into the next generation and generations to come. Again, where you've been. Who you are is where you've been. You got to.
Yeah, you got it. Right. Yeah, which is all great stuff. I love it. I love it that you said that. So are you ready for some fun and personal questions right now?
Take a deep breath.
I think they're going to be more fun than personal, you know? All right. So if you were not making music at all, what's a totally different job you could see yourself doing if not music?
Oh, that's easy.
Easy.
I have a family business that my grandparents started a restaurant in 1946.
Okay.
And it has been family owned and operated since then. July was our 79th year in business. We were just added to the National Historic Registry. My grandparents started it. My dad was an only child, so he inherited it and worked there all his life. I'm an only child. I just inherited the whole thing when my dad died a little over a year ago. And I have two adult sons that are there now managing the business.
Okay.
I'm out on the road doing all my music. But make no mistake, when I'm home and not on the road, I'm slipping in. They affectionately refer to me as corporate.
Okay.
That is exactly
corporate.
What I would be and what I would be doing.
Nice. Awesome. Who takes longer to get ready for a show, you or Daniel?
Oh, not Daniel. Daniel's like 2 minutes.
Oh, like darn. 2 minutes. He's like out of the, yeah.
He can take the quickest shower of anybody I've ever seen in my life. And he's back out the door and he's looking at me going, aren't you ready yet?
Let's go. All right. Yeah.
I do have to say our banjo player, he takes a little bit of time. He likes to primp a little bit. Look nice for the ladies.
Look nice. Okay. So he's single?
Ladies. Well, he is and he isn't. He does have a full-time girlfriend, but he is not married yet.
Got it.
He has a very serious girlfriend. She's as sweet as she can be. Our mandolin player, that's Austin Heffelfinger that plays banjo with us. Okay. He is 20 years old. He will be 21 in a few months. He's been with us since he was 14.
Really?
He was 14. He started full-time on the road with us when he was 14 years old.
Way to go, man. So hell yeah.
We've either helped him or we've corrupted him. I don't know which some days.
I think it's the same thing. Yeah.
Kid, and he is a great, great banjo picker. He's a lot of fun. I mean, he's family. He's lived here with us practically since he was 14.
Oh yeah, then he's family. Yeah,
yeah, he is. And Justin Harrison plays mandolin, and Justin is a phenomenal guy and a phenomenal mandolin player. He's our joker on the bus.
Okay.
Guy that's just naturally funny that doesn't have to try. He keeps us all in stitches. So we've got a nice rounded out bunch. And of course, Daniel is our road manager and takes care of all that stuff. And my job is to know when to be on the bus to get to the show.
Okay.
And when to get ready and get off the bus and play the show.
So you're the stern one. You're the one that gets everything ready and prepared and on time, right?
Set all the sound.
They
set all the sound. I sleep a lot and... I don't sleep that much. They have a hard time though.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I just kind of go with the flow on the road.
Right.
Yeah. We all just have a good time. We have a great time traveling together and get to see a lot of things. And it's a good life. It's one of those things that you either love or you hate.
Yeah.
Because we go so much. But Alston, again, the banjo player, he tends to take a while sometimes to get ready. He likes to take a longer shot.
Good for the women. Come on now, right? Even though you have a girlfriend, you know, it's all about perception and, you know.
My hair is pretty quick and easy to do.
Right. Yeah.
A little longer. You know, it's one of those really cool guy styles.
Right.
It's a little bit longer to do all
that. I love it. Yeah. Okay. So here's kind of a unique question. Okay. If New Blue, if the band New Blue had a signature cocktail or dessert named after you, what would that dessert taste like?
Well,
cake or like donut flavor.
It would be really sweet. Myself and Justin both love creme brulee. We're both big creme brulee fans. There is, what is it? It's sticky toffee something. It's a Gordon Ramsay dish.
Oh, okay.
Dessert. Oh my gosh, it is so good. It's way too sweet. You can't eat a lot of it.
Right.
Yeah. Justin and I are kind of the foodies on the bus. Alston and Daniel will eat anything. Daniel doesn't eat much of anything now because he has alpha gall. It's the thing you get when you get bitten by a certain tick, and he's allergic to anything that comes from a mammal. Anything. Dairy, meats. The only thing he can have is chicken and fish. And he has
like seafood, yeah.
Yeah, and he has to be very, very extremely careful about anything else he eats. He has to read every label. And when we go out to eat, he doesn't usually eat because there's such a high risk of cross-contamination. And if he gets any of that, his allergic reactions are anaphylaxis. He just stops breathing. So we have to carry an EpiPen with us everywhere we go.
Right.
So he doesn't enjoy a lot of the foods that we can now.
Right.
But yeah, we explore quite a few different cuisines when we're out on the road. And we're all big sushi fans.
Sushi's great. I just love sushi. I hope to open my own sushi place and just have it all for myself. You know, just order sushi for me only.
You can invite me.
Yes, yes. You and my cousin Madison, he loves sushi to death. So we could all eat it together, you know.
There you go.
This is kind of a weird question that I thought of, okay? If your voice had a color, what color would it be and why?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
I've never been asked that one before. Congratulations. You got one on me. Well, in some of the reviews that we've had, my voice has been described as caramel.
Caramel. Okay.
Because, I don't even remember the exact quote, but it can be, I don't remember what it was, but, yeah. But caramel.
That's a color? Caramel is a color.
Color, or would you call that light brown? See, that seems just kind of dingy to me. Personality-wise, I think I would be more of an orange or a red.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe we'll get a little bit more in that color. Yeah. I can be really fiery sometimes.
Okay.
When I'm really, depending on the song, it can be really fiery. And sometimes it's more of a soft, muted, a laid back, relaxed color. So what would that be?
Like a sky of blue?
Yeah, maybe a blue. Teal is one of my favorite colors.
Teal is a good color. Yeah.
That's hard to narrow down. Because I think just like what music I'm listening to at the moment depends on what mood I'm in.
Right.
I think a color of vocals, sort of the same way, it would depend on the song and what mood I'm in when I'm singing it.
Yeah.
Because it could be really bright, like a red or a bright orange, or it can be really just smooth and subtle and laid back like a caramel.
And I think caramel is more like beige than brown.
Yeah,
kind of. So I don't know. I'm not good with colors, so that's a lot. Yeah. Okay, so we do have three questions because we're running out of time. But I do want to thank you for coming on. This has been great so far. You know,
I really enjoyed this.
Thank you so much. All right, so let's go back to your teenage years. Okay.
Okay.
Carolyn, you are in your room, sitting on your bed. Okay. We're looking at your four walls. Is there any music posters on the walls? And if so, who are we looking at?
I think I did have a Sean Cassidy poster.
Okay. The Partridge Family, right? He's from the Partridge Family, right? Yeah, okay, yeah.
Who else do I have on my walls? I'll tell you somebody I had on my wall, and he's actually a singer now, and that's John Schneider, Bo Duke. Bo Duke from the Dukes of Hazzard. He was right up there on my wall, and he's a singer now. He has a singing career.
Yeah.
So he counts.
He does.
I got to have dinner with him.
Really?
Years ago in Nashville at a John Barry benefit concert. John Barry had throat cancer. And they did this big benefit concert, and my record label had bought a table. And John Schneider was there, and I got to sit right beside of John Schneider, who was on my wall as Bo Duke growing up. And it was one of those pinch me moments in life.
Yeah.
And yes, I have pictures with him too.
I'll tell you a funny story about John Schneider. My mom and dad, I grew up with Dukes of Hazzard a lot, you know. And we saw John Schneider in concert, right? But I fell asleep. I was like 6 or 7, right?
Yeah.
But my mom says the moment he played the song, the theme song from Dukes of Hazzard, I just woke up. I was like, yes, let's do it. You know, so... So my mom always remembered that she thought it was the funniest thing ever. I just woke up out of deep sleep, you know, because I've heard the Dukes of Hazzard theme. I'm like, yes, this is great, you know.
At night, Mark Wills was performing, and he did the song 1980-something. And he got to the part about about Daisy Duke.
Yeah.
And John's right beside, and he just stands up and does that Duke's woo holler that he did.
Yeah.
Like, okay, Bo Duke is actually sitting beside me, right?
Right. Yeah. Oh, man, that would be awesome to actually meet him. I guess you got a picture with him, too, right?
Oh, absolutely.
You got a picture with him. Yeah, you got to share it on like Instagram, you know?
That's the same night I met Garth Brooks and Trisha Yearwood. That was phenomenal.
picture in series, right? Yeah.
That was phenomenal.
Was this back in the 90s when the Garth Brooks meetup?
No, that was at the same concert.
Okay.
That was about 3 years ago, I think.
Oh, okay. So just recently.
He came unexpectedly. I was backstage, and he unexpectedly walks in. They hadn't planned on him being on the show that night. And he walked in and asked the stage, introduced himself to the stage manager. It was the oddest thing. He's like, "Hi, I'm Garth Brooks." And she's looking at him like,
"I know. We all know who you are."
Very humble.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Very humble, very, very nice man. He and Trisha both. And he introduced himself and he said, "Would you mind if I went out and did a song tonight?" She's like, "Yes, we would really love that."
Yeah. You do.
that's how I ended up backstage and got to meet he and Trisha, and they're both just so sweet. They're both great people.
I love it. I love it. two more questions, and we'll let you go. Two of the hardest questions so far. Okay, pretend like those were all easy questions. These are the hardest questions. I think I'm not sure. You might knock another part.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so we're gonna do like a Mount Rushmore of your favorite artists.
Okay.
Yeah, four. I can give you a fifth one if needed.
Okay.
But we're only going to do four. Who is your top four favorite artists? Now they can be artists, they can be albums, or they can be singers, you know? Okay. And I know we went through some of your singers. So, yeah.
So I told you my three top female vocalists.
Yes.
So let's try bands.
Okay, perfect.
So, I love Bon Jovi.
Yeah.
Love classic Bon Jovi stuff. I've been to several concerts. Neil Diamond.
Oh, okay.
Love, love, love Neil Diamond. That was Neil Diamond was the first concert I ever went to when I was a teenager. That was my first concert, the Coming to America concert.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, yeah.
Fantastic. Heart.
Okay.
I love Ann Wilson's vocals as well as the others, so I love Heart. What's another one in here?
You got one more.
Oh, gosh. Okay, you're killing me on this one. Let's see, where do we go on this one? Susan Ashton.
Okay.
Contemporary Christian artist. Okay. Susan Ashton, she actually, Krauss actually recorded with her early on. And they talk about how Susan walked in the studio. Some of Allison's band talked about that she walked in the studio. She went in the booth. She made one pass through all her vocals and walked back out. And it was all perfect. I mean, she's just, she's got a caramel voice.
Yeah.
So yeah, those I think would be my four.
Yeah. Caramel. I'm trying to see if that's brown or beige, but I can't decide. So who cares, right?
Sometimes, like Werther's Originals, they're caramel. They're kind of golden.
Yes, golden voice. You have a golden voice. Look at you, right? Yes, we nailed it. You know. Okay. All right. One more question. Hardest question than the one before.
Oh my.
All right. Yes. All right.
Okay, I'm braced. Let's do it.
Okay. So, is there one album, song, or artist that you can listen to right now, but you can't tell me, your husband, or anybody else how it makes you feel deep inside your heart?
Can't tell or won't tell?
Can't. But you like you can't put into words how the song means to you.
I got that one. That's not such a hard one.
Perfect. I love it.
It's a song called Resurrection Song. And Susan Ashton does a version of that. She did it live in concert. And that song absolutely melts me. That's one of those songs that I cannot listen to without tearing up. It is so powerful. So powerful. I mean, it is straight scripture from Revelation.
Right.
But you've got to go listen to it.
I wrote it down.
Susan Ashton, it's just incredible. And that's always my go-to. And if I'm having a particularly stressful time, especially out on the road, if I just need that release, that's the song I go to, is Revelation Song.
Yeah.
That kind of brings me back to my roots.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to get me on that one.
Yeah, you knocked that. See, I told you knocked it out of the park, you know, because a lot of people have you know, because there are songs that mean much more to one person than the other, you know.
Absolutely.
And I think I stumped you, but I didn't stump you. That was awesome. Yeah. So, so let's give you some shout outs first before we go.
Okay.
Okay. So the band is called New Blue. That's NU-BLU.
Yes.
Not the regular spelling. NU-BLU. And you can go to, it's newblue.com, and you can see all of their discography. And there's a store there too, so you might want to check out the store, everybody. Looks like you can buy all the CDs, and yeah, buy all the CDs right there, right? Okay.
Where you've been, actually, we did, we pressed an LP on that one. It's the first LP we've done.
I love LPs. Yeah, I got a whole bunch of them right over there. You see them? Yeah, yeah.
That's the good old stuff.
Yeah. Now,
that sounds so good.
Now, is it going to be a colored vinyl?
No, it's not. It's just a black vinyl. I wanted the colored. I got overruled on that.
Really? Who overruled it?
Daniel.
I got to talk to him.
Well, the colors, the company that we were using anyway, the colors weren't as heavy of a vinyl.
Okay, yeah.
Just for the heavier vinyl, for the durability of that.
Right.
The longevity for future generations to hear the vinyl of New Blue.
Okay. Yeah, because I heard they'll give you like a sheet, like ever, it ends up like never ending colors, and you get to pick one. You know?
Oh, yeah, they had some beautiful colors, opaque, translucent colors, anything you can think of they had. And I really wanted a color, but maybe the next one might work like that. But like you said, you can go to newblue.com and you can find all kinds of cool stuff there. And there are also links there for all of our social media sites and for Bluegrass Ridge.
Yes. Yeah. So, and if you go to newblue.com and click on free music, it's on the left side. Give him your name and your email, and you can download it now, right? Yeah. So it's free music. Of course, that.
Yeah. So I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I do too. You know, anything free is for me. That's what I always say. You know. So I guess that's a world down saying. So yeah.
Absolutely.
So we do honestly love you here at Wooden Word Trail, and we beg you to come back anytime you want to. You know, I would be okay. So, are you on tour right now, or are you planning on going on the tour, or you always know, always on tour? Okay,
always on tour. And our from now through the end of the year, we're full. I mean, we're going to be somewhere every weekend. Again, you can find our tour schedule at the website at newblue.com. Find out where we're going to be. Come see us. You come see us, though. You need to come to the table and talk to us after the show. Even if you don't purchase anything, we just love meeting people.
Yeah.
We love meeting people, making new friends, and having that one-on-one relationship with people. I think that's what one of the things that makes bluegrass really special, like we were talking about earlier, is that the accessibility of the artists and the opportunity for fans to get to know you and become more than fans and be friends.
Right, exactly. And you said Daniel does your booking?
Daniel does.
Okay.
He does a lot of our booking. We also work with a booking agency out of L.A. called Harmony Artists.
Well, I need to talk to them because I'm looking at your thing, and you're going to North Carolina a lot, but there are no South Carolina. I'm in South Carolina. Come on, you know.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I know. Maybe next year, right? It's always next year. So, yeah.
Always next year.
Well, I do appreciate you coming on, and I, you know, like I said before, please come back anytime you want to. Maybe you can give us some updates on the road. You know, who knows, you know?
That'd be great.
That'd be awesome, yeah. So,
maybe next thing we'll have to get Daniel in here. He can tell some stories about me.
Yeah, right, yes. Since you outed him out on a lot of stuff, you know, we got to get his version of you in here. So
he has to retaliate.
right. Well, I'm sure he'll be all right, you know?
Thank you
so much for coming on. And for everybody listening, always remember, when words fail, music speaks. Bye, guys.